Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
As we have been mentioning, it is the start today of the 9 days. And it's all very well that I keep saying that and I tell you about the fact that we have to, unfortunately, or whatever it is, it's not fortunate or unfortunate, it's just a requirement. We have to play music. We try to play down tempo. We're going to start more and more introducing more a cappella as we go through this period. But what does it actually mean? What is all of this about? Well, who better to help us than Rabbi Michael Katz? And of course, you can hear Rabbi Michael Katz every Thursday for an hour of Judaism 101. Rabbi Michael Katz, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well.
Hi, good morning to you, Howard, and a good morning to all your listeners.
So some of us really do struggle during the 9 days, and I'm embarrassed to say it's because it's the 9 milk days, and it's not easy. But there has to be a lot more to it than that.
I know some fantastic places that make great milk foods in Joburg.
Yes, I have heard of those. I have. Indeed.
Okay, so let's just begin with that. So the idea, you know, Jews, a tremendous amount of Judaism revolves around what we do and we don't eat. And it therefore seems to be that this is the main impact. But there's a reason. The reason why we don't eat meat and drink wine is because those are the mainstays of simcha, of joyous events, of weddings, of things where we're eating because of a mitzvah. The meat and wine became representative of that, but there's more to it than that, and that is that in the times of the temple, of course, meat was synonymous with the korbanot, with the offerings that were brought, and wine, there was a wine libation, the pouring of wine on the altar as well. And those things were taken away from us at this time. And therefore, how can we sort of sit down to a meat and wine feast when, it doesn't make sense. And here I'm mourning for it, and I'm stressing the things that were taken away and the things that we're mourning about. But I think more importantly, perhaps, Howard, let's start with the fact that today is Rosh Chodesh Av, and it happens to be the yahrzeit of Aaron HaKohen, of Aaron. So the brother of Moshe, Aaron, the high priest, passes away on Rosh Chodesh Menachem Av, on this day. And it is the only date mentioned in the Bible, in the Chumash, the only yahrzeit date that is actually mentioned specifically as a date. It's an interesting thing. Yeah, now, why? Yeah. Because the Jewish people loved Aaron because Aaron loved them. There was absolute love that was shown between Aaron, the high priest, and the people. Yeah, from time to time, it got him into a little bit of trouble. But Aaron was the ultimate peacemaker, and he loved everybody, and everybody loved him so much so that the Torah also records that this was the only time that the whole Jewish people mourned for him for the full duration of the month of mourning. Everybody mourned for him. So why are we introducing the idea of mourning today? And of course, it's all tied up with the difficulties that our forefathers faced when they were in temple times, as the first the Babylonians and the Romans marched on Jerusalem and tightened the noose around the neck of the temple and the Jewish people. While that is all there, we've got as a backdrop the idea of the fact that today, at the beginning of it all, we remember a man who taught us how to be kinder to each other, how to love each other more, how to be non-judgmental. And that is much more, I think, the focus of this period of time, really, than having to sit in misery and do nothing. Right. We need to do something. At this time, it's not only about the things that we stay away from. Perhaps the focus should shift a little bit more to the things that we should be doing. We should be more engaged in kindness to each other. We should be thinking about the reasons why temples were destroyed according to our sages in the first place, which was because of idol worship or because of immoral behavior or because of hatred between people. So surely that's the area that we should focus our attention on during this time. Don't sit back and do nothing. Don't close yourself off in mourning,
right?
But in a positive way, to go out and do something.
Well, I guess the message then is that this is not simply historic. Because if it's simply historic, then we mourn for something, but actually there's not much to be done in 2026 about that, because it happened. It's just sad, but it's history.
Quite correct. Mm. Dare I say that anything in Judaism is not merely historic. Mm. We look back, and that's like the catalyst or the reason why it all began. But there is a relevant message for us today, and of course for the future as well, our yearning for an end to suffering and pain and war and hatred and anti-Semitism and so on has to drive us to say, well, there's got to be something that I can do about it. And it's not just about remembering. It's about doing something to change that atmosphere and that vibe in the world, and to make everything far better, and to bring about the return to our Beit HaMikdash and the coming of Mashiach and so on.
So what practically, if people want to take this on, what are some of the basic laws? You've mentioned them, but let's just go through those again. And then, not just the laws, what can we do from a spiritual perspective during this time?
Beautiful. So some of the things are, of course, we don't eat meat and drink wine. We still do not have weddings. We don't listen to music. And you mentioned that about a cappella music and so on, if you can call that music at all.
Not easy, you know.
And we also are not supposed to wear freshly laundered clothing. We're not supposed to bathe for pleasure. It's not a good time to go for your yearly sauna or swim in a swimming pool and so on. For cleanliness and so on, all of these things are allowed, and one should speak to one's own rabbi about it. But those are the negatives. On the positive end, the idea of yearning for the Beit HaMikdash, for the temple, well, surely we should know what we're yearning for. Mm-hmm. Therefore, study, Torah study about the Beit HaMikdash, about the temple, and so on, is one idea. Number two, instituted famously by the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, said we should bring simcha into these times, and the one simcha that we can create in this time is making siyumim, completing the learning of sections of Torah and having a celebratory event. You can't always eat meat and wine at them, so let's not make that mistake, but some kind of a simcha that we can actually do of completing things of Torah learning. Giving charity. We're going to read it in the Haftorah of this coming week. It says Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tzedakah. Tzedakah, charity. Charity during this time is essential and great and wonderful, and it breaks down barriers and it brings people closer together. And of course, then going out there and showing the love, loving people a little bit more, ending your faribbles, stopping your nonsense, being a little bit closer to those who are close to you and those who are not so close to you, making amends in that realm. That goes a huge way to bringing us closer, to bringing about the requisite unity and making us all far better people.
It may be a little bit more controversial, but it's something that annoys me every year, and I'm just I would love your view on it. Is I see on social media that, and it doesn't happen here, but across the pond in New York, a lot of the kosher restaurants will have a siyum every night so that people can go and have meat. Surely that is just so counterproductive, not counterintuitive. It's actually just defeatist, isn't it? Doesn't it defeat it? I'm just interested in your view on it. It bothers me, and I'm not even sure why it bothers me, but it really just irritates me that.
It bothers you because it is I think what they used to call in the old days, it's a gypo move.
Yes, maybe.
It's doing something in order to circumvent the intention of what we should be doing. You know, I think there they've mixed metaphors in a way, because the idea of making a siyum, as we said before, is to bring joy into the world. If all I'm doing it for is so that I can have a piece of steak, it seems very, very simplistic, childish, and almost, as you say, it irks one a little bit. Having said that, that's the worst crime that people do.
Right. Okay. So maybe that's the other way.
Maybe we should let them go. But But quite correctly, the idea of making a siyum or
like if you're genuinely making a siyum, great. That's something.
Correct.
But correct.
Or if there was if there's a bris.
Yes, I was just going to say.
So there's an interesting thing there, by the way. If you attend a bris, according to our sages, to custom and law and so on, when it comes to the to a bris, only 10 people can actually eat a bris.
I didn't know that.
Even though they and they need to be 10 people who would have attended the bris anyway.
Right.
And there's possibly part of your answer.
Yes, you exactly.
Say, well, I'm going to a bris because I can eat meat.
Right.
Running to a siyum because I can eat meat seems to be, as you said, sort of counterintuitive or going against what the intention is.
That is where we leave it. Thank you for that. Thank you, as always, for bringing us perspective and wisdom. Rabbi Michael Katz, he's director of Chabad House and Rabbi at Chabad of Ilovo.